Animal Demonstration Garden, and youth and adult volunteering and education. The 11th Annual Common Ground Edible Garden Tour will be held on Saturday, July 8th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. It will start at 687 Arrastradero Road in Palo Alto. For details, call 650-703-7282 or visit commongroundgarden.org.
And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So here we are right now with the moon at 19 plus Sagittarius, which astrologers call the global climate crisis degree. Its Sabian symbol is humans cutting ice in winter for summer use, long-term cyclical insight and foresight and dedication. And it's right next to Saturn, our authority that we want to insource from outsourcing it to sociopathic, dangerous, demented dingbats. The Sabian symbol for Saturn is the crown and torch of the Statue of Liberty, the necessity to defend democracy from tyranny. So more than perfectly, esoteric America, we rejoice at the return of Laura Kortner and Robert Hieronymus, among my favorite deep esoteric scholars and agents of liberating cultural hijinks, authors of The Secret Life of Lady Liberty, Goddess in the New World, as we delve into the desirable destiny of America via the Great Seal, Lady Liberty, and more, as we continue to apologize to the world and all beings with whom we share this earth. One of their websites, and we'll bring up others, is 21st centuryradio.com. Welcome, Laura Kortner.
Hey, thanks for having us back on again.
That's good. All right,
we gave us a call.
It's delightful. Yes, because I first hosted you on March 23rd, and then we did a wonderful replay, and then we did a show where I couldn't hear you at all, but you carried on splendidly. And now we're back.
That was quite a funny show.
That was a funny show, but you were the right people. If I couldn't hear the guests, you were the radio pros to go, I can't hear you, but I know what you're saying is fascinating. Carry on. And you did.
I'm guessing. But, happy birthday to the Declaration of Independence.
Yes, so we can go many, many places. I did want to bring up one wonderful thing that is happening now at the G20 summit in Hamburg that is a good trickster distinction. There's a wonderful presentation of zombies, humans dressed as zombies, representing political apathy, and then they tore off their zombie dead costume, and were all lively and festively, in the best sense, to free themselves from crusty thinking. And a woman interviewed says, "I'm very happy that there is performance of this style taking place, completely the opposite of this fearful riot atmosphere," remembering that fear serves tyranny. So I just wanted to put that on our trickster guideline, template here. Yeah. There's so many things. We remember the wonderful trickster guidelines. Performance is liberating, better than imprisoning, protest, confrontation, violence. As we continue to suck chi out of the world's volatility and exhale it into liberating invitation to dynamic, sane reverence. So there's so many ways. You, of course, are authors of the fantastic book, The Secret Life of Lady Liberty, and you had guided me, Laura, to the part, your website on that, which is Sightings of the Secret Lady of Lady Liberty, and I did just post that everywhere, but maybe you could tell our dynamic listening audience that link and then report, maybe both you and Robert, on the Sightings of Lady Liberty.
Well, related to what you were just mentioning about a demonstration that was creative, you know, using fun and tricksterism, zombies, whatever, as you were saying in the last interview that we did with you, that the spirit of Lady Liberty is rising, and you see that in all these protest demonstrations and these extremely creative people who are using that image of the Statue of Liberty. There were 100 of them dressed up as Lady Liberty outside many different embassies, but the London embassy had a very beautiful one on the 100th day of office, and there's this great artist organization of protesters called We Make America, and they're creating symbols of the torch for carrying in the protests and crowns, and people are getting together in little meetup groups to create Liberty costumes. And what we have on our gallery on our website, which is about our book, The Secret Life of Lady Liberty, so the website is secretlifeofladyliberty.com, and under one of the galleries, which is basically just /liberty-sightings.com, we have posted all that we could find of the cartoons that have come out since the election and the protests and the various ways that people are using the images of Liberty to express what is the best about this country and the ideals that it was founded to uphold of compassion and fairness and equality and justice. Equality under the law, that's basically what that symbol's all about. And, of course, as we talked about on your earlier show, the feminine aspect, the divine female that needs to be co-equal with what we have been patterned in this Western civilization to understand is exclusively male and hierarchical. I think that's how we got ourselves into this mess now, because millions of Americans are still brought up to believe that strict paternal father model, and that's why they're feeling comfortable with the situation that we've elected.
But it's awfully strange to see all of our politicians together and there's no women, but mostly men, which is something which is sickening as far as I'm concerned. It's more or less a great challenge at this particular time as to how we're going to be able to turn this around. And we will turn it around. It will take time, but at the same time, we're going to see a lot of unfortunate accomplishments by people who really do not understand what a constitution is and what our founding fathers were all about. As a matter of fact, perhaps most important of our founding fathers was probably Thomas Jefferson. And Thomas Jefferson, unfortunately, was very shy, and because of that, he didn't open his mouth wide enough and most of the time, and that really slowed our progress down. And I'm very much concerned about other younger people, especially waking up to what has happened to our country, because, as we said before, we are no longer a
Democratic
Republic, but a corporate hierarchy, and it's bleeding all the way into our police, and I just have a real sad feeling about that, and that's one of the reasons why I'm glad that you called us, because I've been going through this, you know, this struggle for about 40 some years, trying to understand how we could have been so fooled into thinking that the kind of government that we were aiming for was open and free in the public, but it's not. And it's the kind of thing that I think that's going to take a great deal more courage than we're therefore showing right now.
Yes, definitely, everything you say, and trickster medicine. I have a gift for you, Robert Hormanos and Laura Kortner, and all of us really, which is an ally in South Africa managed to smuggle me a near lifetime supply of umpepu, which Sangomas had given me years ago, and I was almost at the end of it, and I just am here at the Coyote Cat Witchery Broadcast Central, lighting the umpepu, because they said if you are where talking to good-hearted people who believe in equality and justice and fairness, you may light this and use this to call upon, you know, the liberated aspect of ancestors to come into play. So you just did it. You just did it, Robert Hieronymus. I lit the umpepu, and we've got Thomas Jefferson in a not shy but bold way going,
he was a strong man. He really was. He took a lot of punishment from the Republican Party during that particular time. And they tried to many times destroy his reputation. And they almost got away with it. And that's what bothers me so much, is because it was a real close call. And today, I wish I could think of a word that encapsulates our president's consciousness.
Possession. I think possession is good.
Well, nine-tenths of the law.
That's right. Illusion in Ludo in the game. I think we want these different things. So, how do we think of SCROTUS, which is the only way I really refer to him, is SCROTUS, so-called ruler of the United States. What I felt when I left, Cleveland last year, that he was possessed by a cunning demonic retrovirus. And it is part of the collective atmosphere. Anything that's anywhere is everywhere. I mean, there's this right wing, I don't really want to use the word populism because I think it's misnamed, over there, everywhere. And we go, so we're all composting tyranny into nutrient for Renaissance. But I liked what you said. You've been dedicated to staring into the abyss, right? For 48 years or more. And we're all staring into the abyss now. But I like the kind of trickster dynamic of the guiding sky story that says staring into the abyss is where the alchemy of comedy comes, to transform dread and depression and fear and tyranny into liberating levity, which you both do, you hijinks practitioners, in the most serious and dedicated way. So I love that. And
go ahead. I was just going to throw it right back at you, Caroline, because you're the funniest radio host and wittiest and mystical endeavor that I've ever met. So,
but most importantly, you really understand us. Really understand us.
That's so generous. I am replenished by your generous enthusiasm. But also when
people do.
Esoteric America, how do we want to dive into the unfulfilled but still dedicated there with ancestral help? And Laura, you're such a responsible, wonderful, wild woman. Because I'd said esoteric America, you go, I'm working on it now. I go, so I have dusted off. Well, no, you go. Well, let me just finish the sentence. I have dusted off my copy of Paul Foster Case's The Great Seal of the United States. It's here beside me.
I did too.
Yeah. Oh, good.
I also picked up Founding Fathers Secret Societies, which is this book by this gentleman right here, Dr. Bob Hieronymus, that I helped with, but it's based on his doctoral dissertation. And it came out in 2006. It's a more popular form of that and an updated form. And this is a really good book that you wrote.
Excellent. Let's honor it and make it available to everybody and tease forth the pertinence.
Founding Fathers Secret Societies is what it's called. And it's mostly an analysis of the United States Great Seal, which people are familiar with from the $1 bill. The front of the Great Seal is this very balanced version of the eagle holding the talons in his talons on the right hand. It's holding the olive branch, which was very important to the design because for the first time in history it's facing towards peace, whereas the monarchs of the past always had it facing towards the implements of war. So that's an important change. But the reverse side, which wasn't really commonly known at all until 1935, it was designed in 1782, but was never cast as an official die because they, for various reasons, decided a double-sided seal wasn't necessary or too expensive or whatnot. And then when they reinvestigated it in the 1880s, they decided it was too closely aligned to the Masonic fraternity that they thought everybody would think it looked like. So it never got cast as an official die, but it was used on the $1 bill by Franklin Roosevelt and his cabinet. So that's how we started to know about it. And it's basically, it's a blueprint for the destiny of America, as Bob says in this book. It describes the, not just the American nation and its people, but it refers to all humanity on the planet, the reverse side in particular, because it shows a vision of self-transformation. It's a saying, it's the eye in the triangle above the unfinished pyramid. You've got two pieces here. You've got the union of spirit and matter, and it becomes a new being, a transformed being. And it's more than the sum of its parts, and it's different from either. So this pretty much says what America and Americans are all about. We're a melting pot. That's where our strength comes from. And in a lot of different ways, and we can go into that, like you were saying, Paul Foster Case's work and the work of Manly Palmer Hall and Nostradamus, yeah. Francis Bacon. There's all kinds of prophecies for this area and what it can be and can still be. I mean, right now we're in a period where it seems quite unlikely, but it's still, we must transform ourselves, basically. That's what the Seal is saying, before we can change the world. And that's what America's destiny is about. We had the vision to become this melting pot and to incorporate all these other strengths into one, into unity, e pluribus unum, out of many, one.
And it's also very similar to the Statue of Liberty in the sense that it is about balance, keeping in balance, internal balance and external balance. And when we keep in balance, there's a good chance that we'll be able to control some of our worst tendencies in regards to deciding to control everything. Because that's what, when you get into the symbol that Laura has been talking about, a lot of people, when they saw it, and this is especially in regards to the very first conversation I had with Jimi Hendrix, it was about that symbol. It was about what it meant to him, and I gave him my ideas. He gave me his ideas. I had no idea that out in California, you had restaurants using that symbol, and they were extremely popular. And he was very excited about that, and that's what he wanted to learn. And I was working with the State Department at that time, trying to get them to be open and discuss this thing without being offended by the esoterica about it. You know, because it has a lot to do with consciousness and higher consciousness and the ability to become one with all, which is more or less where all of us are headed eventually.
Yeah, America has led the world. That's what it was doing in this revolution anyway, into this new age, Novus Ordo Seclorum, of democratic consciousness. But in result, we've also led the way in polluting the planet and industrializing the planet. So this is the part that we need to change now, and America's always been about change.
Except that I think we've been a little bit done in by our media, terribly done in by our media, because I don't, I think it's been about 40 shows that I've done with the History Channel and National Geographic and all those other shows, and the problem is that they had biases, the people that were working on these pieces, they had biases, and they were going for excitement. They were going for give me some interesting stuff. Whether it's true or not, pontificate on those images, and that really makes a hell of a difference if you're deciding to find out what this symbol really was all about. And it was obvious that the people that created it, which literally was, in a certain sense, Benjamin Franklin and Jefferson and others, they were concerned with how to maintain balance near the end of our, near the end of where we stand today, which is deteriorated considerably.
Right. Who is it who said, here's a republic if you can keep it? It's one of those founding fathers.
Oh, gosh, yes.
That sounds like Franklin.
Franklin and others, because that was really key. Yes, we had a republic, but we're going to lose it. And that's exactly, in a certain sense, what we did.
And, but again, and as we are, again, brewing the antidote, may it be, you know, I love what you said, Bob, because when I was eavesdropping on a seatmate's computer who clearly worked for some big media thing, when he got up to go away, I was like, what's that? And the edict was coming on down on high, and it said, in the reporting of all stories, increase urgency, eliminate subtlety. I go, well, there we have it, right? That's what you're saying. And so we want to, you know, decrease urgency and increase subtlety and nuance and complexity and deep delving and the whole esoteric, you know, realms of, you know, because it's clear that, you know, and I will toss it to you both to clarify, but that in the symbolism, like the eye not quite descended on the pyramid, that they were laying out principles to be animated, not proclaiming that they were in any way fulfilled, right?
Right. Right. They were not fulfilled. But we just moved on and pretended like we understood what was going on in regards to using two symbols, because it used to be that when you had seals, you had a front and a back. And the reason why the founding fathers decided we don't need a back anymore is because the story that it tells was not been officially recognized. It's been more or less a long struggle just to get people to talk and think about what are these elements that are eyes in triangles and pyramids, and especially in regards to our founding fathers and how it is seen today. Because as I was saying earlier, the failure of the History Channel, Discovery Channel, and a number of other channels to not protect the symbolism of this country more or less has distorted the meaning, and it's going to be very difficult, especially for younger people, to understand what this whole thing is about. Because to them, it's just symbols. And then symbols aren't that important. And that's a very big mistake, because the symbols are the kind of thing that you can immediately understand and get to the heart of the matter. Symbols have that kind of power, whereas words don't. So that's when I'm looking at my book right now, and I look at it and think of Freemasons, Illuminati, and Rosicrucians. Now, you know the term Illuminati, right?
Well, clarify it for people who go into conniption fits about the Trilateral Commission.
Yes, well, I know. That's the problem. That's
right,
the problem.
Exactly.
They do go into conniption fits, and it's really about nothing, because, as Thomas Jefferson said concerning this group, he said he could not see where they were doing anything that was so negative. They felt that they obviously needed to change our government. Most people felt like, well, that was not such a bad idea. But unfortunately, it did not work out the way we had hoped, especially in regards to the times that I've gone to the White House, and the Reagan White House, and other four or five other White Houses, pushing this idea of please recognize the symbol, because it is higher consciousness. It is more or less where we are headed. And obviously there are people that do not necessarily think that that's necessary. They're offended by higher consciousness. And I think we can see pretty much that kind of thing that having been developed here. But I feel that it's going to take, oh gosh, I can't find the right words tonight on this. It's going to take bringing this the secret information out, and not get involved with the secret society aspect of it, because the secret society of it had nothing to do with the creation of it. And it was used literally to get people anxious and worry and fear.
Right. Yes. Do you remember in the Illuminatus trilogy that there was the word fenord, right? And it was a word that we were conditioned, trained to not hear, but was often said at newscasts, and it would pummel people into a state of insecurity and fear, like, good evening, fenord. Anyway, so that's what you're, mm-hmm. yes, we're here to break the spell. But, Laura, let's say that you and Robert Hieronymus and the likes of our dedicated listeners are willing to be public dreamers, and we just put on the table strategic advantage goes to those cultivating intimacy with power of symbols, yes, and the art of directing collective attention, so that we now, I'm just going to do a little more about setting up why it's perfect to have you both, so let us assume cultural narrative lead, and right now specifically, and it's so delightful to have you both here, is that Neptune in Pisces, which is, let's make everything available, everything esoteric available that has ever moved humans to goodness, let's make it available to the humans, because we got to either kill them or heal them, we'll try healing them first. And it's got this beautiful 150-degree angle to Jupiter, which is to take esoterica into fresh expression in cultural narrative in an artful way. It wants to happen. What you've been working for, Bob Hieronymus and Laura Kortner, and many of us, it's here. You've arrived at the right climate where the deepest part of you is welcome. Let's just make that true, right?
Thank you, boy. That certainly would make me feel 20,000% better.
There you go.
This has been. Sometimes in your life, it just takes such a long time to achieve getting through to, especially the major media and that kind of thing.
Yes,
They should not have condemned the pyramid and the eye and the triangle. They should have tried to take a look at more closely what those symbols were really all about, and why did Jefferson and our founding fathers decide how important this was. They thought it was really key. Of course, has to do a lot with the pyramid having a capstone that, of course, is the eye in the triangle, which I believe most people I think that they're beginning to understand that this is not the thing that they thought it was.
Well, let's look at what the designers said it was, and they included a motto right above it to show what they meant by that pyramid, the eye and the triangle.
Yeah.
Anuit Keptus, which means he favors our undertaking. These people who designed it, our founding artists, as I like to call them, they were definitely saying that they needed to have, or they knew that their undertaking was more than the work of men, as Paul Foster Case put it. They were putting it out there that they knew that this was something that was being under the hand of divine guidance, that they all believe that, and you were saying you do what you can in the time that you're given. You may not get to the goal that you want, like Francis Bacon in his New Atlantis. He wrote extensively about what could be in this new world that they had discovered in the 1600s, and how they could form this college of great thinkers, and all the world could contribute people, and it would just be kind of like the New Atlantis.
That's
and the one I just love this, the motto that Thomas Jefferson wanted to put on the Great Seal. His designs were rejected, but he liked that saying of rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God, and that is so fitting for the situation we find ourselves in now, as we are facing another tyrant in power. So remember that when you're protesting against it, if you disagree with something, you're doing God's work if it's a tyrant that you're rebelling against. And a lot of what we talk about does seem idealistic. And again, Paul Foster Case, I just love what he said about that. Idealism, yes, that's what's more of what is needed in this sick world, as he put it. And Benjamin Franklin thought that the truths that they were writing about in the Declaration were so clear, he inserted that word self-evident. It's just so clear that men are created equal, or men and women in our case. So, the E Pluribus Unum, out of many one, we're looking for unity It's about American is not supposed to be merely the rule of many. It's not mob democracy. It's not about that. It's just that it's the movement away from the group mob and the clashing opinions toward a singleness of purpose, a singleness of effort. It's based on this knowledge of oneness from which all things proceed.
Beautiful.
And Anuit Kepdis, I just love that one.
No, that's great. We're going to take a very short break, a very short musical break with Taj Mahal in a moment. But yes, oneness, as our friend Deborah Falmouth reminds us, salam, peace, shalom, peace, is not the absence of war, but the presence of oneness. And we go, oh, we love that. Mm-hmm. Our perfect for today and for all-time guests today on the Visionary Activist Show are Laura Kortner and Robert Hieronymus. One of their websites is secretlifeofliberty.com, and we'll be right back after this very short break.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them crossed his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Ooh, chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Grab my indigo sky ship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So, more than perfectly today, Esoterica America, delving deeply for that which is a promise of goodness in this country and the world. Our guests are Laura Kortner and Robert Hieronymus, again, agents of liberating cultural hijinks for such a long time, authors of The Secret Life of Lady Liberty, Goddess in the New World. As we delve into the desirable destiny of America, another one of their websites is secretlifeofliberty.com.
Lady Liberty.
Of Lady Liberty, excuse me. Secretlifeofladyliberty.com. There we go. Thank you very much. So part of the esoteric dynamic is our powers of imagination and where we direct them collectively and personally. And it is so the fixation, the trance going, oh, everybody look at the rocket in North Korea. It's like, you know, so we want to kind of snap the trance going, hey, over here, you know, to critique and then guide the vision. And anything you want to chime in that you've further gleaned, Laura Kortner, from the Great Seal of the United States, and also, you know, the secret architecture of our nation's capital by our ancestral ally,
David Ogden.
Yeah,
I just got another email about him earlier today. This interesting coincidence you mentioned him. He was a great author and wrote 50 books or so under many different names. But yeah, his Secret Architecture of the Nation's Capital. Bob interviewed him. They became quite close personal friends, actually. Met a long time before you interviewed him on the radio show. And we're thinking about publishing some of the things he sent to us.
He gave us some secret information.
Oh, excellent.
He was collecting for a long period of time. And, you know, his premature death made it not possible for him to share that information. And fortunately, I took care of the stuff, and I promised him that if he passed on, I would let people know exactly what some of the things he's working on that most people didn't know he was working on.
Yeah. He had a book that was almost finished, I'm sure.
Yes, very.
You saw a lot of it. And he was an expert on the prophecies of Nostradamus, which have been so corrupted by most people and misunderstood by most people. But he did a very excellent job he spoke 5 or 6 different languages and spent his lifetime in many libraries around the world. So I trust his work on that. But Nostradamus is one of those people who foresaw this civilization in this hemisphere in 1660 when the first edition of his prophecies was published. He's talking about this land that would observe always on a Thursday, a day to express thanksgiving. He's talking about a land of freedom of religion, freedom of opportunity, freedom of life, He predicted that we would have to fight several wars, one with the Orient, before becoming a great power in the pattern of world peace. So that's something to look forward to. But at the time that he wrote this, of course, there was
Can't we say we already did that with Japan?
You could.
let's check that. Let's suck the
check
chi
that
out
one
of
off.
Future.
Okay.
Yeah, right, and go check. Okay, we did that. Right there.
Yeah, considering what we're facing now in the fears of the rocket you just mentioned. But, you know, when he's writing this, there's no indication that there's going to be any great civilization here. But he writes that there's going to be America. He even called it America. He called it lots of different names, but the Hesperides, the Blessed Isles of the West, he even calls it America, the land which they keep the Thursday. I thought that was extraordinary. And he's not the only one. You know, as I was saying, Francis Bacon and several others in the Greek pantheon, you can of philosophers, you can pick out a number of things where they're anticipating a land of this nature where freedom will be the key.
Well, that's another great mystery dealing with Francis Bacon, and of course, I don't believe. How do I put this?
What?
I don't believe that. I believe Francis Bacon had something to do with the creation of Shakespeare's works.
Oh yeah.
I think that I've collected a lot of material on this over the years, and I'm just, of course, it's never going to be accepted right for quite a while because there are so many scholars that have already swallowed the tale. But unfortunately, it's got a lot of holes in it, and I think that the meaning, destiny, and purpose of America is one of the keys of what all these symbols literally all about. I think that he is a great Francis Bacon was a great teacher. He may have had a lot to do with Shakespeare's stuff. Certainly, Shakespeare, when you study, now this is going to sound radical to you and to other people, but a lot of people don't realize that when you study the life of Shakespeare, there's a big hole in being able to prove that he wrote the Shakespeare's works. And I don't think it's going to be easy ever for people to accept that it was a group of people working on it. And I've been collecting that information for about 50 years because it's something is going on there that surely, as we used to say, surely meets the light of day. I just quoted somebody from the old days. And, you know, I was thinking about your experience with a totemic animal that has left you.
Ah, thank you. Yes.
I think that really this is it is so sad that no words can never really truly express the fact that the closeness between humans and animals and they're working together as a team, which I'm very fond of thinking about and
definitely
and working on that, and that's my wife is right now finishing her book dealing with animal consciousness that is working with animals. Should be out in sometime in
September. It's called The White Spirit Animals, Prophets of Change. I know you're going to have her on your show in the future because you're just going to love it.
Yeah,
I will.
Sure will.
I will, absolutely. Yeah, it's the departure of Stella Coyote. But I'm thinking I did the Stella Coyote Memorial Solstice Tour in California. Hi, everybody who turned out. We did deep honoring and will forever. But I'm also thinking in some form of conjuring the Stella Coyote Foundation for the Improving of Human Manners.
Because that
would
very
be her
good idea. That's a great idea.
No, that's right, because that would be her fondest wish in the experiment of being ambassador from her people. And, you know, it's a unique thing. And absolutely what you say, may all of our intimate and loving relationships across borders with the animal and plants, the flora and fauna, be of mutual reciprocal benefit. That's the democratic deal. You know, let's tease democracy into every fiber of our being and how we relate. Ally etiquette between humans and coyotes and dogs. And I do have, you know, two Abyssinian kitties who came to not supplant the grief of Stella Coyote, my companion of 19 years, departing, having gotten all the good out of her beautiful little body. But they are the feline equivalent of coyotes. So it's some heartful solace. So we welcome Kismet Kitty and Amon Ra.
She really lived a long life.
19 years, two and a half months. She, we learned a lot from each other. I've put a lot out there too, but that's why I go, in trickster we trust, you know, and, you know, as trickster is keeper of democracy, and the only news to trust is the mythic news, really, in terms of the guiding of our fantastic human imagination towards the desirable, to absolutely critique the horror. You know, to look into the abyss, got to do it. You know, it's like, I love Dave Chappelle's comedic warm-up routine as he smokes a cigarette and looks really bleak and looks into the abyss and goes, all right, this is where comedy comes from. And, to look into the abyss and go, whoa, yeah, the mirror, going, here's the mirror. It's really dangerous and cruel. And here's the window. Here's where we could go, and here's the door. Let's go there. This directing of attention, and you both are so wealthy, and I'm so glad, you know, I did burn the umpepo, so we're offering, you know, offerings to David Ovison and Francis Bacon, and one little thing I can't help myself too, when you were speaking of Shakespeare, mm-hmm. I love, you know, etymology. So a friend had said, do you know the etymology of charisma? And I said, no. And she goes, well, it comes from charis, from which we get charitable, from which we get Eucharist, from which we get cur, from which we get Cordelia in Shakespeare, dedicated heart. And so true charisma is not swagger. It's a truly charitable heart. And I go, we just want to put this on the table of there's the toxic mimic and the con, right, which is in full swing. But there's also the tonic trickster liberating dynamic. And just for everybody to, you know, put on their work table of discernment, you know, is this imprisoning, serves tyranny, or is this liberating, serves renaissance, to which we're all dedicated?
Very good question. You're really a philosopher.
Oh, well, bless your heart. We're all aspiring in this mix. But I'm so, you know, I'm so glad that you brought up Stella Coyote, because it's true. She is my closest companion of anybody in the world. And so off she goes into the big mystery. We don't know the mystery of death, the mystery of life. But I was thinking of her today too, going, you know, she gave up a lot to be a between worlds person. So I would wish for her the freedom and autonomy that she gave up, even due to our relationships, because I had to keep her safe from humans, right? Mm-hmm. So may there be no fences you can't jump, no little pale ankles you can't bite, you know, with impunity. You know, may you have, you know, vastness with which to romp and to feel like, wow, job well done. You know, going, anyway, I just want to wish that to her liberated spirit.
We want to wish that to her too.
To everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Except that maybe we don't all need to bite white ankles. That was her favorite. One of her favorite things to do. Just not actually sever the Achilles tendon, but just counting coup. Just going, I gotcha, and I could have severed your Achilles tendon, but I didn't. But I do like, you know, let me toss to both of you. I mean, I do like teasing the coyote principles because, you know, into our syncretized brew going, yes, Francis Bacon, founding fathers, you know, Stella Coyote, David Ovison, you know, who brought what to this renaissance, right? And yourselves going there. And, you know, trickster brings, you know, no rules but guidelines. And as a strategy, you know, it's like, don't, like in Aikido, right? And coyotes are very good at Aikido as well as RR. You know, don't block, guide, going, you know, so you break the trance of the collective, hey, and then you guide it over here, there you go, to its own autonomy.
Yep.
So.
Yep. And one needs to be patient during this process and not so arrogant about it, you know.
Patient, you've been extremely patient, Robert Hieronymus. But yes, so what do you mean by patient? It's going to take a long time, you mean?
Well, I'll give you an example. I've been working on a project, and it deals with, of course, Woodstock, and whether or not there's going to be a gathering or not, that's something else, but the recreation of a bus that I painted, and we have finally got some leads as to where the bus that I painted that disappeared can be found, and obviously, I'm anxious to do the physical labor of recreating this because of the story that it tells. The story that it tells symbolically is really about what most people would think, at least what I think, is we are one people on one planet, and we're going to work and move towards that direction whether we have opposition to it or not. Because in my opinion, that is the destiny of our nation, is to lay the foundation for the rest of the world, the kind of freedom that we need to be able to maintain our form of government, which right now suffers greatly.
And you mentioned counting coup, which of course brought to mind the Native Americans, and when you're asking for something to shift the attention towards, that's the first thing that I always think of. And, you know, long before any of these Europeans brought their ideas and philosophies over here, this land was flourishing, at least with religious tolerance. You know, that was completely foreign to them, to think that you should respect everybody's religion. They all had different beliefs, and if it just suits them, it's okay. They deserve the respect to other right-minded people. So it's this archetype for generous, an enlightened way of life. It's part of this continent's common inheritance, and we need to appreciate that. And the things that we have absorbed from the Native American system is just countless, beyond count, what we've absorbed from them and haven't given credit to. And the more that we can appreciate that, hopefully, the better. The not just the Maya or the Iroquois, all over the North American Indians, they reached high culture, especially down in the South with the Maya, and they were living according to democratic tradition, more or less, in a lot of ways. The members of the tribes, they took care of their aged people. They provided for the widows and the fatherless and the severely punished, you know, anybody who would have taken that to exploit anybody else. And they invested wisdom. They invested much in the counsel of their elders and their wise people. And all matters of the common good, they were submitted to arbitration. And they had very little crime. It was almost unknown. So we don't know much of this because the Inquisition came in with Spain, and tens of thousands of Native Americans were tortured for their own good, killed for their own good, to save their souls. And most of these fabulous libraries of the Mayas were burned, and the historical records were destroyed. But democracy was definitely established, not by the 13 colonies, but not first anyway, not here. There were at least 2,000 years before, you can say, the coming of the Europeans. The spirit of human equality and cooperation and freedom of worship was flourishing here. That's part of our destiny. And if we continue to make the old mistakes, we're going to be rewarded with the same old pain. But if we make new effort, we can set up these footings that we're trying to build for a better way of life. And we have to consider the ways of nature. And yes, it's idealistic, but we must work for change. We have this humans inside us. We all have a hidden divine element, but so does society. Human society has a nobler part, and it's part of this common vision. It's part of necessity. And I believe that this democratic commonwealth, this place that was foreseen by a lot of seers, it's this destiny, and that's what we're brought into being, to keep it moving a little step at a time. Whatever the task is that's set before you, in some way to be creative and bring about more cooperation, that's what we're working for.
I want to just dive into so much of what you've just offered too, but I think something we can tease into our strategy for now, which is, remember in the Holocaust of Mayan civilization and the burning of the books, it was Bishop Landa, a bad, up to no good priest, who was heaving the books of scholarship, you know, of the Mayans into the bonfires, and then he had a change of heart. And he's like, wait a minute, and he began plucking the books out of the bonfire. So the only books we really have left of the Maya are from Bishop Landa, the destroyer, who then had a change of heart and became the protector, right? And, you know, like the Br'er Rabbit tales were the great trickster teaching tales syncretized from Africa but found many places. But they were collected by a white slave owner who then had a change of heart. And I want to go for the change of heart dynamic, like in 7 Days in May, you know, where things are so bad. You know, I talked to, you know, NSA whistleblowers who were in the NSA for 40 years, and they're going, after 40 years, that's enough. I can't put up with this anymore. Or John Kiriakou, who was a guest a couple weeks ago, interestingly nuanced person, but who loved, you know, who loved joining the CIA and apparently was not aware of the School of the Americas and the teaching of torture that had long preceded his moral resignation, and then, you know, his persecution by, you know, many, he goes into that. But nuance, and the moment of awakening. And I think, you know, if, as Dion Fortune encouraged us, the purpose of ritual magic is to spiral into group mind, expanded wisdom and tolerance, we do want to conjure this invitation to all those, you know, they're right in the thing, and it's so, as Bob points out, as well as we all know, it's so like, hooah, conniption fit inducing the level of vulgar, murderous, tyrannical, delusional dingbattery, that many people are going, oh no, wait a minute, I just can't. Now, I want to toss it back to you in two sentences as well, because so there is a movement. This calls for nuance and complex storytelling. So there's a lot of 25th Amendment movement, you know, to remove Trump, especially before the 18 elections, a movement supported by Comey and the Republicans who want to, you know, but then we get Pence, right? So we have to really call on the ancestors to go, no, a clean and miraculous sweep. Trump, Pence, Ryan, I forgot who's the next guy, then Orrin Hatch, you know, all the way down to some humble, you know, Native American librarian going, yes, you're the president. You know, just some, it's time for big cartoon wishes going, you know, or inviting in, you know, and creating the Stella Coyote Foundation for humans becoming, you know, reasonable, in on that dynamic. But, do you have any thoughts on this matter of inviting and magnetizing the spirit, the living spirit of democracy, the living spirit of potential to which you both are dedicated? You know, come on in. You want to extend an invitation, Laura, in any way, and then Robert.
I'm gonna let Bob take that one.
Well, okay, all right. There you go.
When we look at what's going on with, say, for instance, within our government today, I have to call your attention to someone who I think is going to cause some real difficulty. His name is Rick Perry, and he is the pastor that calls the Statue of Liberty a demon. And Perry and Palin are among many Republican hopefuls who basically have affiliated with the mega churches and preaching of dominionist philosophy. Mike Huckabee, Ron Paul, Newt Gingrich, we all know those names. But that idea of the secrecy and the Secretary of Energy being in this particular situation gives us a very bad situation in regards to Mr. Perry, who I have no faith whatsoever in. I think he's a very dangerous person.
So I like, before we toss it back to Laura, I like just, you know, again, here we go, Coyote. You know, may all those abusing power be moved to a place they can no longer harm themselves by harming others. Whoosh! I have found this to be quite effective in micro circumstance, and I'm calling for just a collective dynamic, because it's clean. We're allowed to invoke and invite anything of which we would be the happy recipient. So we go, if I were abusing power, would I be happy to be moved to a place where I could no longer harm myself by harming others? Sure, then. Because it is beyond, we've reached beyond the mind to think our way out of this one, right? It's going to take everything. It's going to take everything to which, you know, we're all dedicated, which is, I like just saying magic is a willingness to cooperate with everything, going, you know, and when we don't know what to do, we invite in that which does, going, come on in, we humans have reached a conundrum, we can't do this by ourselves, and the backstage gods go, yes, it's by yourselves that got you into this pickle, invite in ancestral guidance from the humans and the plants and the animals and the thing, you know, come on in. King Arthur didn't die, right? He goes to live, to go take Pilates classes in Avalon with the priestesses, awaiting the world's call at a time when we need positive yang to dance with powerful, spirited, trickster feminine. We go, now would be really good. You know, and the same with Haijon the Conqueror of the South. He doesn't die. He goes to live in Haijon the Conqueror root to await the world's call. So we might all be going, you know, now would be really good. You know, come on in. Is there anything or anyone... Yeah, Laura, yes.
I would just agree with you in that you have to be creative and silly with your visualizations of resolution to this situation, because both the 25th Amendment and the impeachment avenues have Pence or other people that you don't necessarily think would be any better, maybe more stable, but not necessarily better. So we don't know mentally what the solution is. I can't figure it out anyway. So I would be, advocate for the way that you're thinking about it in silly ways. You know, we need to release it to the higher powers of cosmic good, and according to the people that founded this nation, the United States anyway, they had full faith that there was a higher power of good, and that this nation that they were founding would be best led by virtuous individuals. It could only be led by virtuous individuals, and yes, that they put in all these checks and balances to keep the situation that we have now from developing of selfish rulers.
And they were expected to live up to their standards.
Mm-hmm. But it happens, you know, the secret societies that were so helpful in the American Revolution, Freemasonry in particular, can traces its roots back to Akhenaten, the Egyptian ruler from around 13-something BCE.
Yeah.
And he was the first realist, the first democrat, first in democracy, the first monotheist, the first pacifist, so to speak, first person to attempt to found a religion. And I like the fact that he was greatly influenced by his mother, his outlandish ideas that went against the grain of the Egyptian priesthood. And he saw it as his duty as the ruler to protect what he saw as the God within, this beauty in the hearts of all his people and all his creatures, and to give everyone the possible opportunity for their expression and perfection. And what I like best about his history is all the other Egyptian rulers are pictured on the walls with their wars and their spears and going off to conquer. And he's the only pharaoh in the history of Egypt who chose to be depicted with his arm around his wife and his little daughters playing about him and on his lap instead of going to war. And that's the kind of, you know, of course, he gets killed, of course, you know, in the end of...
Mysteriously, of course.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot. And there's something in what you said, because I've been secretly suffering with static at my end. And as you were speaking, for the first time, the clarity emerged at my end anyway, so that's very good. But yes, and there's... Akhenaten gets a lot of bad press. I hope we can talk about him more deeply, you know, in the founding of the city of Amarna. And he's, of course, the father of Tutankhamun, who changes his name to Amun to go back to the old gods. Anyway, so, yes, all of these powerful things. So you want to... All too soon, we are on our outro. It is such a delight. I yearn to cavort with you in perpetuity, Laura Kortner and Robert Hieronymus, again, authors of The Secret Life of Lady Liberty, Goddess in the New World, and many, many other things. Go to their fantastic website, 21stCenturyRadio.com, and also SecretLifeOfLadyLiberty.com. Thank you so much, Laura Kortner and Robert Hieronymus.
Well, we're looking forward to meeting you and
definitely
getting together sometime.
Absolutely. I am for it. You're just up the road in sacred Baltimore. And thanks also absolutely to our board op in Berkeley, Erica Bridgman. And remember, always better a trickster than a martyr bee. Follow me on Twitter at StandUpCoyote, CoyoteNetworkNews.com. And we will reconvene next week with Terry Tempest Williams. Thank you, team. Woof.
This is Dennis Bernstein, host of Flashpoints.
This is Miguel Gavilan Molina, host and senior producer of Flashpoints.
Heard on KPFA every weekday from 5 to 6.
Flashpoints is a hard-hitting news magazine that monitors the centers of power and reports back to the people.
We bring community radio into the community and give voice to the voiceless, from occupied Palestine to the falsely accused on death row.
From the brown revolutions in the fields of misery to the front lines of the new labor and civil rights movement.
On Flashpoints, black and brown lives really do matter. So join us here on KPFA every weekday at 5 p.m. Thank you.
Invited to an exploration of the Black cultural awakening during the 1967 Summer of Love in San Francisco. This event is hosted by the California Historical Society and the Museum of the African Diaspora. Explore the elements of the Black psychedelic impulse Thursday, July 13th at 678 Mission Street in San Francisco from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Panelists include poet and KPFA DJ Awacha, legendary vocalist